Welcome to A New Lens with Comgood Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. I'm here today with Alexandra Dest. Alexandra's founder and CEO of Willow, a wealth management firm in the Northeast, and we'll obviously hear more about that today. When we first met, I very quickly realized that Alexandra thinks outside the box, and I was fascinated by our discussion. So I'm very excited to have this conversation. We talked anything from cryptocurrency, impact investing, and then one of the things that was fascinating to me is this idea of even bringing love into investing. So looking forward to this discussion. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. And by the way, I'm so far outside the box, I don't even know where the box is.
I've been told. That's why we love having people like you on. We love hearing all these different viewpoints. So let's start off and just give us a little background on yourself, where you grew up, you know, maybe where you're in school, and then a little bit of your career.
So I was born and raised in Greater Hartford, Connecticut. I went to University of Connecticut for an undergraduate degree in economics. I started my career with Advest, a Wall Street firm in Hartford, and subsequently was transferred to New York City after the market crash of 87. Started my career originally on the legal side of the business, compliance. So I had the great pleasure of auditing branches and, you know, just at around the time of the market crash where I was seeing what was being done to people's portfolios. It really did not sit well with me. And I, you know, also the fact that the legal side of business, compliance side of business did not wow me. So when I had the fortunate exposure to Wall Street, to trading, that's what I knew was in my blood, because I have a way of assimilating data and numbers and charts in a way that I can't really describe. So that really excited me, because I felt like I was, at the time, I didn't realize I was a lateral thinker. So I was actually able to use both hemispheres of my brain. So the deeply data math driven person to the highly intuitive side of me as well. The piece of me that really understands that this is as much psychological as it is anything else. So after New York City, I was recruited to join a firm in the Berkshires, which to become the chief investment officer for a bank. At that time, I had no idea that I knew I wasn't feeling well. I was kind of sick, but I had no idea what was happening with my body. As things always happen in my life, things come to me just as they should be. I believe in divine intervention. And I subsequently took the job in the Berkshires, which was a simpler form of life, but still a very competitive and challenging job. I had realized at the time that I had a mess, and I needed to pay some attention to how I can heal my body. And that gave me the space to do that. So that brought me to the Berkshires. I'm happy to say that I'm fully healed from MS. Everybody can.
Wow.
As far as I'm concerned. So that's what this was my gift, being able to come to the Berkshires and leave the city where I was stimulated to a simpler life. Stayed at the bank for 15 years and then started my own company 12 years ago.
Going through the crash, how did that impact your view of Wall Street, working with clients?
Okay. So a little bit, you know, it left a bad taste in my mouth, and I'll tell you why, because there was a piece of me that was still doing the audits. And what I was seeing is that it was very transactional, that the industry, the brokerage side of the industry was still very transactional. And so because there was a lot of desperation after that crash, I saw a lot of things that were not really, you know, could be considered churning, could be considered, you know, unsuitable behavior for certain clients. So that made me realize that I had to be on the fee side of the business, not the transactional side of business. So it was exciting in that I was thrusted into a market crash, and there was so much going on and so much stimulation. At the same time, when I was viewing, you know, the people that, let's say, I was auditing, I saw things that did not make me feel very comfortable.
You're, and I don't need the exact math, but let's call it, you're 30 years into your career. You've done a lot of things. You've got a very successful business. This next question you can answer however you want, but maybe you'll give a glimpse of where you're at. How would you best describe yourself in the context of where you are at in your life journey?
So I feel like I'm finally hitting my stride, let's say. I am extremely contented inside. I've done a lot of internal work to allow myself to raise my frequency, let's say, to really marry two aspects of myself. So there was a time where I wasn't living fully authentically to who I really am. So here I am, this analytical woman, has a successful business, but I wasn't integrating the deeply spiritual side of myself. That one who really has a deep knowing of what love is and what's important to me. You know, my moral compass, right? So I feel like I'm truly integrated the full aspects of me. I'm no longer afraid of rejection, which, you know, I believe many people in humanity are afraid of rejection. I certainly was one of them as a leader. I didn't want to be rejected for being someone who thinks so far outside the box, right? I experienced throughout my career a lot of pushback, a lot of aggression towards being an independent thinker, and an independent thinker who oftentimes saw things ahead of time. So there was all this push against me. And so I was a bit trigger shy of being fully authentic to myself. So in my journey right now, I'm authentic to me on every level. I am a deeply spiritual person. I also run a capital management company. Those two don't have to be separated. They can be one and the same. And that's where I am now. And it brings me a great deal of pleasure, a great deal of peace, and even freedom, like a sense of freedom within. All I have to say is I'm happy. I feel really good about where I am in my journey. And when things get difficult, it's still okay. I still have that foundation now.
So you're at this point, how would clients experience your former firm, your interactions differently today than whatever, 20 years ago?
You know, always at the core, I always had deep caring towards other human beings. So that was always there. That never left. The difference is, I feel like people can no longer sense a conflict. So a conflict within myself. I feel like people are innate beings and they can feel things. So when what I really like, and I think is one of the biggest compliments I could ever get, is when I have a client or a prospect or someone who comes in and says, you walk your talk. There's no pretenses in you, you know? And I do think that oftentimes, I can only speak for myself. There were times where I just really desperately wanted to fit in with the norm. And so I was outside of myself. So I think, first of all, people can feel my authenticity of my care for who they are. And you know, if they are not a number to me, they are not simply a portfolio, they are a human being. Now, it's having said that, I can't be with everyone, right? But what I can do is create an environment, create a value system within my organization that embodies some very important aspects of who I am. So one being love, right? One being love. So that is part of how this culture works, is that it's not a pretense. It's not a pretense. We hold each other in the light. We hold each other in any type of crisis that may be happening among maybe my team or even our clients. We want to hold that space for them. This isn't just about money management, right? This is so much more.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I think the first time you and I touched base, I remember we had some discussions and I think I told you some of the reasons why I'm in impact investing, and I even used the word probably not sheepishly, that's not the right word, but probably not out in front, is to me, it's about unlocking joy and freedom, but embedded in that is love. And so I remember talking to you, and at one hand, I'm like, look, I don't say this from the podium that much, because in traditional settings, people look at me like I'm nuts. Like, what do you mean putting love into the investing? But so you challenged me in a very healthy way to say, no, be bold, say that. And so I've grown up now 25 plus years in the financial service industry. And it's just, I believe that we clearly need love in the financial system. It sounds crazy to say it out loud from my training and what I think people hear, but who doesn't want compassion and love around the power of capital, which has the amazing capacity to do things, but money by itself isn't going to fix stuff. So anyways, I just want to say thanks to you because you challenged me to go be bold. Feel free to say that.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you. That makes me those are like the little things in life for me where I say, okay, I just did my job. Did my job. I inspired somebody else to really be authentic, to say, hey, I want love too, and I want to give it. And because really at the end of our lives, it's all that really matters. That's it. That's the exclamation point, right?
Well, I think there's also, this expectation, especially in the financial world. If I were in a discussion or if I'm in a discussion with an advisor and we're talking about bringing love into this whole paradigm, there's this assumption then that you have to shut off your analytical brain. And you're like, no, you don't, you can do both.
Yeah. And there's also an assumption that it's a weakness, right?
Yep.
When in actuality, I see nothing about me that's weak. I see everything about me that's bold. I mean, because I dare to, and you dare to stick out and say, no, this is who I am. And I'm okay with that, you know? And so I can fit in like everybody else and not even speak of it and not even live it. But the truth is, that's a lie, right? For me, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, congratulations, because it does take a lot of courage for whatever reason when it's such a basic need.
How are you trying to change the world?
It starts obviously with me. So I think maybe you recognized on my website or in my signature, I write, as I change the landscape within me, the world around me changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel the greatest impact I have on humans, my clients, on my team, on anyone and on myself, is my own inner journey. So this is my core belief, that if we change us inside so that we are allowing ourselves to become more authentic, we're allowing ourselves to become more contented, that we can't harm another. It becomes impossible to harm another. So my feeling is, as if we as humans, as individuals, can develop. So my thing is, leaders who are at the head of these corporations change enough their own inner journey so that they can never cause harm to another. It's impossible. Mm. This to me is what is needed in capitalism, really, is the individual turning and changing. So this is what I'm aspiring to. This is how I'm trying to make an impact, is to encourage that journey for leaders to change and to have an inner journey to grow and evolve.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's true. I was a psych major and then I was a biblical studies major. And yeah, unless you take some time to search yourself, your soul a little bit, just look at being a parent. If you, you know, you look at your parents, you're like, they did a great job here, didn't do a great job here. I'm never going to be like that. Well, until you do the work, you're going to be like that.
Yes. Yeah. So that to me is the real change. That's where the real change is going to come, because it becomes a lasting change. It becomes a lasting change, and you can no longer be influenced. You know, let's face it, when you sit in a boardroom and you're the only one sticking out, let's say, or you have a differing opinion, it's a little bit harder to voice it. Mm-hmm. And I think once you get really embedded in that place, then you can change everything. You will have a greater impact. I feel that within myself, that because I'm secure within, that I have a greater impact.
Not to put you on the spot and not to break.
I don't care. Go for it.
And not to break confidentiality. Have you seen, or can you give us an example where that has played out with maybe one of your clients as they've worked with you, and how just how it's played out in a client's life in front of you?
So let's talk about a client and let's talk about business. How's that?
Yeah.
I could be a few examples. Okay. So a major corporation, some years ago, we were trying to figure out why they weren't ESG SRI qualified. And so we made a call to them. We were shocked that they actually called us back, because we're a very small investment advisor. They literally, for whatever reason, you know, I believe in synchronicity, they brought a team of some of their higher level executives to talk to us through this and why this was important. And I was very outward to say, I wanted to see them make loving change. And I outwardly said that to them. And interestingly, because I wasn't afraid of being rejected, they took it in. And shortly thereafter, they did become SRI ESG compliant. And they sent me a little, gave me a little call of, hey, thank you. Like, we really feel like we're hitting our, just that the conversation itself was just impactful for them to just reflect within. I was shocked. That was a major company. Okay, major S&P 500 company. So I was a little shocked by that. In terms of our clients, we do something called constellations. Okay, we have an expert who's from Europe who does family constellations or constellations. And we invite our clients in for these things.
Okay.
And if you know anything about it, it was developed after the World War. And that what they were finding is that descendants of those who were in the Holocaust, descendants who weren't even touched by the Holocaust, were carrying within them the same fear, the same anxiety, you know, a PTSD, so to speak. So Constellation was developed to deal with that. So we offer this same type of program here where, well, COVID put a stop to it for a while, but now we're getting back to once a month where we can invite our clients in to actually experience deep healing. So example, we had somebody who said, you know, I want to be a better leader at my, she's a leader for a nonprofit. She wants to be a better leader. We get her in the hot seat. We have this expert who works with her. And by the end of her process, she realizes what's stopping her from being a better leader. So for example, me, what was stopping me from being a better leader was my fear of rejection. As soon as I dealt with that, I became a better leader. So that's how that woman happens to be a client. So we brought her in and now she's feeling more comfortable in her role and not worried. For her, it happened to be the same thing as me, the fear of rejection.
So what's interesting is and I'm sure you're the same way, growing up in the financial services industry, there is this outward statement as well as an inward belief that is prevalent, which is keep your emotions out of investing.
Absolutely.
Well, and what you realize is what you just said, and it's what I've come to realize over the last, 7 to 8 years is, first of all, you can't keep your emotions out of investing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so acknowledge it, harness the good emotions to it, and then be mindful of those that probably aren't positive towards it, i.e. fear and greed and whatnot.
Mm.
And so, you know, you talk about that yourself until you realized, you know, that rejection was something that haunted you or whatever it is, it affected the way you viewed the world.
Without a questionable doubt. It affected the way I managed it, you know, it affected every aspect, right? So yeah, it affected relationships, it affected everything.
So I think of the stereotypical advisor, mm-hmm. where it's alpha, beta, numbers, you know, my clients just want to hit their financial goals. And until you get into this soft side of stuff, you're just missing half the equation for these advisors. I mean, for these investors.
Why not both? Why not both?
Yep.
Why not all of it? I mean, we don't have to slice our life up into pies and say, if I get this, then I can't have this. Well, that's not necessarily true. That's just a construct that you've created in yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's part of slicing through everything, is to slice through that construct and say, no, you can have both.
When did you personally realize the power of capital?
I love this question. Okay. Bottom line for me. So let me just start by saying philosophically, I don't believe capital has power.
Okay.
People have power.
Okay.
It's what we put into it. It's what we make it. So this is why, again, the inner work to me is so important, because if we are simply deploying our capital for our own egos, you know, to make us feel better, you know, to, you know, whitewash, let's say, like a greenwash, or we're just doing it without that deeper lens, it's not lasting. It's not lasting, really. And so for me, the power of capital to me starts inside of the human being, inside. So that's my power. I now decide, I have the power, and now I decide, right? So that's where I just kind of want to start. All right. So this, but I realized, if I'm like looking more from materialistically, okay, let's just look outward. I realized the power of capital almost immediately as I was in the industry, when I was seeing the influence that mm-hmm. these companies have on spending behavior, you know, on my own personal, like I was actually looking at a microscope of how I am influenced by mm-hmm. the advertising or, yep. or anything that was going on around me. So I'd say very early, you know, okay. in the late 80s, I recognized the power that capital had on all of the decisions that I was making.
Right. And I don't know if this is the opposite end of the spectrum, but it clearly fits into, well, I hope it fits into this discussion of the power of capital, which mm-hmm. is in your case, and I totally agree, there's two components. There's the money itself, the capital, and there's human capital and mm-hmm. it's what's inside of you. What does stewardship mean to you? Mm. And do you believe in stewardship?
Yeah, totally. I believe, you know, number one, walk my talk. Like that's absolutely important to me. And secondly, yes, I think for me, if we have any opportunity to do good for others, that it's incumbent upon us to do that, just not only for ourselves, but for the whole, not for just our families, but for the whole. So to me, stewardship, yes, I completely believe in it. And I feel like, again, it starts from our inner journey. It starts from within, because you could be a good steward, but not really be holding that light for, you know, that it could be on shaky ground. So yes, for me, it's about wanting to give positive influence and wanting to, you know, in our case, deploy capital properly or in a very thoughtful manner.
Can you give us some examples of different ways you have seen some of your clients be good stewards of something, whether it's capital, whether it's time, anything that would inspire somebody to go, oh, I never thought about that way. That's inspired you personally.
Internally, I'll say that we use our capital for self-development, you know, emotional and spiritual development of other humans. One thing I really like is I've seen one of our clients who set up a trust in perpetuity for specific things for veterans. And she put her heart and soul into what she wanted to see for this particular fund. And upon her passing, this would go into perpetuity. She put, because she's a therapist herself, she knew exactly what needed to be done. And it's such a well drawn out plan, and it's so from her heart. Like all of her being is in that, and to the point where I can see for her, she's much older, where now as she transitions towards the latter part of her life, that she knows she's leaving something significant behind, and it brings her joy. Like this makes her end of her life be so, you know, off the charts, if you will. So to me, that's like just to watch her process, be mm-hmm. part of her process and developing this and really thinking it all through and feeling it through, talking it through and putting together a real solid plan and making sure she has the people in place who have the heart to follow through. That's really, I find that inspiring.
I can only imagine those discussions and how rich and deep they are. Mm-hmm. In addition to what you're doing on the pure financial, making her money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. So there's that, of course, you know, we're ESGSRI compliant and we like to think ahead. Okay, great. I mean, that's the easy stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
But you know, to your rejection comments earlier, if I'm listening to this and I'm thinking I'm an advisor and it's like, oh my gosh, how do I even start having these conversations? Because these are vulnerable, kind of risky conversations.
Yeah.
People think I'm nuts for talking about stuff
I love
like
it.
This. Yeah. You've been wired this way to have these discussions with clients, right? Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. So this one's totally fun, totally off the wall. If you could make a dream come true for you in your life, what would that be?
I want every single living being to thrive, period.
That is
my one dream.
Mm-hmm. So what does thrive mean to you?
Content, happy, joy, free, have all your needs met. You know, I mean, it's a long shot, right, at this mm-hmm. point. But this is, if you, you know, you want to know my dream, this isn't yep. about this company being a billion and leaving a legacy and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, that's great. But really, really what drives me, when I really feel about what drives me in my life, truly, and brings me great pleasure, is when I see people thrive. And that's mm-hmm. when I know, like when you said to me, I inspired you to be more mm-hmm. bold. Well, you know, ching, ching, ching. I mean, that's better than a paycheck. So that's how I feel.
Yeah. A word, when you say thrive, a word that I think of in kind of my vernacular is human flourishing. I don't know if it's the same.
Same. Beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we all could use, I mean, it's not to be a Debbie Downer, but you just watch the news and there's a lot of negativity, and it's amazing. You hear a positive story and it's so powerful. And you're like, can we not hear more of those? You know, because there's a lot of wonderful things that people are doing despite the news.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Turn off the news. Yeah. That's all I have to say. I don't watch the news.
Yeah.
I look at data. That tells me everything. I don't. Yeah. I look at data. Yeah, turn off the news. And I love that you're doing this type of thing, Jeff, because we need positive news. And I feel like there are so many companies right now. Like I did listen to one of your podcasts, and I'm so inspired by some of the things that people are doing now mm-hmm. to deploy capital properly. They feel very grounded in their desire and their direction and motivated by it. So it's great.
Well, what's interesting is I've seen in this impact investing space, I've been in it now, call it 6 years or so. And I actually think the social unrest, the political unrest, mm-hmm. COVID, really problems is what spurred people. And I saw a shift in January of this year in a big way of they want to be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. I mean, they want, it's what you said, they want to thrive, and then mm-hmm. they want to see others thrive. I mean, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. not everybody gets a joy out of seeing other people thrive, but just go to watch a professional basketball player, watch a pianist who's good at it. Who doesn't mm-hmm. enjoy watching somebody who is at their best, excelling in the moment, thriving? I mean, it's right. inspiring. One of the things, and I don't know if you've seen it on my podcast, but I have a deep passion for formerly incarcerated, those men and women who are returning. Mm. And so even, and it's probably selfish on one level, because chatting with them and hearing, get to be a part of these men and women's lives when they get released, you talk about inspiring. You talk about somebody who could be down on themselves, either because they did something wrong and they paid the price, so to speak, or lived the consequences. They don't. I mean, some of them still beat themselves up, but others take it and it was a learning experience. They move on and they go do amazing things. I mean, to me, that's inspiring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. I love it.
Give me a snippet of some of your thinking around cryptocurrency, for example. Mm,
okay. Yeah, thank you for that. It's Web 3.0. I have no question in my mind. The technology has been there for a while. They're building on it. You know that we started the division to manage this asset at the beginning of 2021, but we've been studying it and in it since 2017 on our own as an organization before we opened it up to clients so that we had a sense of understanding. But I do believe, like anything else, Jeff, it could be used for good, could be used for mm-hmm. bad, right? So the propensity for being able to do good with this network is very strong. And I think, you know, from our perspective, I would just dare say we're quite bullish on it. And just like anything else, when the internet started, you know, you're looking into a black box, right? I mean, how does the internet really work? You don't know, right? How does your car work? You don't know. You know, you turn the key and it's going. Well, at least I sure don't know. definitely not. But it's the same thing here with cryptocurrency. You let's just call it digital asset or however we want to, or, you know, however you want to label it. We don't necessarily know the internal workings of it, but we know what it can accomplish. We know that what it can do and how it can change the face of industry and humanity tremendously. And we've had this investment thesis for quite some time, but now we're seeing money being truly made, not just by trading this, okay, but actually the smart contracts. And you see wide level adoption. You know, so every year, every, you know, passing day, every passing week, we're noticing more adoption. And so our investment thesis is slowly being proven, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we're you know, we're quite optimistic on the we can't call it an asset class, but we're optimistic on digital assets at this time. Yeah.
Any other thing that you'd love for our listeners to know, anything you're thinking about today that you'd want to share?
I encourage everyone to find their sweet spot and find that place of, you know, whatever turmoil, whatever is inside of you, don't be afraid of it. Walk through it, get there, do it. You'll be a better leader. You'll be a better person. You'll be better adjusted to life. Embrace the challenges and embrace them as something that can help you grow and become stronger and happier, really, in the end. That's all I have to say. I want to inspire others to do the same.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And just love recklessly. Just go for it. That's all I have to say. Don't cage yourself. Don't protect yourself. Forget it. Forget it.
Forget I love it. Well, Alexandra, I really appreciate your insights and your willingness to share with us and to be vulnerable.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing that.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah. Well, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.